Hello and welcome to the Gestaltung Podcast. My name is Martin Groschwald. And in this episode of our season Car Design in Asia, we will be jumping into India. Now, my guest for this episode is Pratap Bose, the Chief Design and Creative Officer for Mahindra. And he is one of the very few Indians that have really made it to top level positions within not just the Indian, but the global design and automotive design community. So Pratap will give us a very nice insight on what is happening in India at the moment, what is culturally happening, what impact this has on the design, but also, of course, why it always took a little bit longer for them to pick up compared to China, and really give us an idea of where India and the market over there from a designs and creative perspective could go and what designers should really look into when they want to move into that kind of market or when their companies move into that kind of market. So very, very excited to start off our journey through India with Pratap. And in our next episode, we will then have Martin Ulrich from Tata, the second of the major players in India, so that we have a nice little comparison of what's going on in India. So without further ado, please enjoy the episode with Pratap, myself, and All About India. Pratap, hello and welcome to the Gestalten podcast. And it's an absolute pleasure. Like, usually we only have conversations, you know, at dinner tables or when we bump into each other at a motor show. So thank you very much for taking the time and welcome to our little podcast recording here. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Martin. You know, like you said, we are either, members of a jury somewhere or we bump into each other, you know, at a show or at some sort of event. And it's nice to actually, sit down and speak to you on a very interesting subject, I think.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about, in particular, India today. So, you know, the season on the Gestalten season this time is on car design in Asia. But Asia, of course, is absolutely massive. And so we said, like, we're going to split it up a little bit and have these different locations as well. So with you, obviously, the focus will lie on India, but also we're going to look a little bit further beyond that as well. But yes, you are very special in that kind of context, India. You have been working for Indian companies for about 20 years now. You've done both Tata and Mahindra. So the big guns in that context have been under your wing as well. So as a starting point, you moved to Tata from Mercedes back in the old Japan studio for like the very old people nowadays that still remember that. Can you give us a little bit of an idea how your first experience was when you, you know, started at Tata and you kind of felt, okay, this is an Indian company and this is different from the Germans, even though you were in Japan or like when you were at Piaggio in Italy and stuff like that. What was the design feeling back then about India when you started?
Yeah, so, you know, Martin, you're exactly right. We are talking about 2007, you know, when I really felt that having gained some experience in overseas companies, so Piaggio, Mercedes, a little bit of Mitsubishi during the Daimler Chrysler Japan days, I thought it was the right time to contribute to an Indian company. And I was very interested in that, you know, in trying to, from day one, ensuring that, you know, Indian companies can really stand on their own 2 feet in design terms and as brands and really become as desirable as anything else. You know, the Indian market, Martin, funnily enough, is extremely global. I mean, so almost every manufacturer is there or has been there, and some have made it and some have not, in fact. You know, there are some brands who did sort of try to break through in India and didn't succeed. So it's a very particular market in general. And we'll, of course, talk a little more about that. But, you know, for me, the aim was to work in an Indian brand and be seen as good as anything else globally, because the competition in India was global. So while Indian products were not globally sold in large numbers, everything global was in India. So it made it very, very interesting in that sense that it was a truly local market with completely global products available. And I found that extremely exciting. At the same time, at that point, Tata Motors in this particular case was expanding its research and development footprint beyond India. So they were opening an engineering and a tech center here in the UK, in Warwick. The timing was right. It's kind of a right place at the right time. And, you know, they offered me to come and join the UK tech center in those days. Design was a very small part of the tech center. It was more, it was established to actually give engineering support to the engineering research center in India. But design was seen, luckily, as one of the, you know, areas in which Tata Motors would need support and would need development. And, you know, that's what I joined to do. And it was 14, 15 years of a hell of a ride, actually. And I feel, you know, where Tata Motors is today from where I joined in 2007 in terms of design, quality, products, brand, is a totally different company. Mm. So I moved on from there and took on yet another challenge, as you mentioned, at Mahindra. In 2020, 2021, I was speaking to them and they had a very bold vision about going electric. And this is, again, what attracted me. You know, if we had to leapfrog as a country, going into electric or battery electric or pure electric was a way to do it. You could go beyond what I call the internal combustion engine wars that that Europe and the rest of the world were protecting in a way. It was your entry card into the automotive world. But going electric really made the whole process a lot more democratic. So you had a great electric car. The barrier for entry into other markets is actually lower technically, not brand-wise, but technically more equal, I would say, than depending on, you know, internal combustion engine where the, you know, the technologies are older and more protected and, you know, closer held by companies, because that was the intellectual capital and property that they created for over 100 years, you know. So the barrier to entry in other markets through a ICE route is much more complicated than through the BEV route. Again, technically, not brand-wise. So I jumped at that idea. India is a fast-changing country. You know, as you know, 1.1 billion people. It's the third largest automotive market in the world now. So it makes it extremely exciting. You know, there's a huge middle class of 600-700 million people. That's all of Europe, you know. I think India is still 30 odd cars per thousand, you know, people, which means, you know, the potential for growth, Martin, if you get it right, is absolutely, you know, the sky is the limit. So we launched a product a few days ago. It got almost 200,000 bookings in the first day of opening. And it just shows you that if you have a right product, there are people for it. There is a market for it. You know, so for me, Mahindra was that exciting sort of challenge that I saw in 2020, 21. And, you know, the last 3 years, again, have been a hell of a ride.
I can imagine. Can you share a little bit with us? Because, and I don't mean this in any derogative way, but for a lot of Westerners, India is this kind of best cost country. And obviously, if you look back in the last 10, 15 years, we've seen a lot of top-level executives of, like, you know, Microsoft and, you know, like in the Silicon Valley in particular, where Indian-born, especially IT engineers, they took on the kind of top-level position. Looking back in those kind of last 15, 20 years, what holds the country maybe back creatively or from various different kind of other points that this doesn't really reflect properly within the automotive design world? Because, quite frankly speaking, we still have a lot of Western European white guys. And again, this is not derogative. It's just the way it is. To say this is where we're going and this is the direction. But considering on how many people it is, obviously education that happens in India as well, what's the reason that, like, more people are not coming through on a day-to-day basis? Because it's like you and Sandeep, obviously at Renault, like, you know, really pushing up. But there's not really that many Indians, despite the fact that there's so many and despite all these advancements that you've talked about over the last, call it, 20 years.
Yeah. So, you know, when I studied industrial design, Martin, there was actually no automotive design course at all in India. And today you've got, you know, four or five really good ones. So as a discipline of study, first of all, it's extremely young. it's very, very, it's, I would say it's, you know, not even 10 years old as a discipline of education within design. So, you know, there itself lies the first issue, right? That you haven't had a pipeline of people big enough to make this sort of global mark. Having said that, a few of us who are lucky to get a chance to study overseas. So, you know, you mentioned Sandeep Bamra, he went to Strat. I went to RCA. There are others who got a chance to go to Art Center or wherever. And they have done very well. And they are doing well as well, you know. So, but that is, you're right, much fewer than what you would expect. But now as I see designers, that pool building up, I won't say it's a critical mass yet, but I see more and more people going overseas. So there are some working in China, for example. There are some in Europe, including Volvo, Geely.
Yeah.
You know, there are some in Japan. So I think, you know, that's starting to happen. You know, we just hired a guy who used to work in Korea. You know, we hired him back to our India studio. Extremely talented. We hired another exterior designer from Honda R&D Thailand. Again, Indian origin. And he came back. So I think it just needs a little bit of time for, and you know, automotive also is a long gestation period, right? Each product takes 5 or 6 years. So by the time you start and the product comes out, by the time you make that mark, you know, it does take a little bit of time. But once it starts happening, I think you will see more and more. The talent is incredible. I go to some of the colleges. I get a lot of portfolios. You know, it's only a question of time and opportunity. The other thing, and this is beyond my Mahindra role, Martin, and I talk about this a lot. I really feel that the global OEMs who are in India have to now start investing in Indian design, or at least studios mm-hmm. in India. You know, you can't be in the third largest market in the world and not have any design presence. And, you know, you can count on your fingers how many real automotive design studios there are in India from scratch. People who can take it from sheet of paper to sheet of steel, end to end. That's very few. And I think that, again, is an area, you know, where I invite, actually, lots of heads of design from other OEMs to come to India. I don't see it as competition. I actually see it as creating an ecosystem of design, mm-hmm. you know. Where is our, you know, Coventry, our Turin, our LA, our Munich, you know, where is that place where there's enough talent to feed all the companies? And I think we need that. And I've spoken to Lawrence in Renault. I think they have something in Chennai. They're going to hopefully expand. There's Maruti Suzuki. Again, they do some good work. But again, you know, I just hope they keep investing in design in India. And then you'll see some significant, you know, sort of talent emerging from there. Because when you come out of college, you've got to still go into something, right? You've got to go into a company. The other area which is very interesting and very exciting, Martin, beyond the four-wheel automotive is what I call the two-wheel automotive, right? So the bike and scooter world. So there's companies like Ola, there's companies like Ather, there's companies like Ultraviolet, which are doing phenomenal work, especially Ultraviolet and Ather. You know, real grounds-up engineering and design. And there are other startups who are now getting into, even in three-wheelers, electric three-wheelers. So that's emerging as a very exciting space, which doesn't exist anywhere else. So if any students are listening to this from and in India, you know, I would ask them to expand their horizon beyond just four-wheel automotive. I know that's the most attractive, sexy, whatever. But look into mobility, look into three-wheelers, look into startups. That's where the real opportunities are coming. So, so my answer is actually in two parts, therefore. One is, I invite OEMs to expand and open studios in India. And the second one is, Indian students, take the opportunity to look at other areas beyond car design. And many of them are doing it now already. Look for opportunities overseas and you will make your mark. I think there's enough talent there.
Yeah. How important? I mean, we see this a little bit in China at the moment, where we have, I don't want to call it the trend, but like the designers that are 15, 20 years into their experience now, becoming chief designers, becoming faces of brands. Yeah, I'm thinking about Frank Wu at Jidu. I'm thinking about Fan Zhang at GAC. Fan Zhang. Obviously, for you guys, it's you and probably AJ Yin as well, who's running the Tata studio in in India. How important is it, do you think, for the Indian design community, or like in general for this kind of Asian design community, that the locals are coming back after their stints abroad to bring that experience in, to really push it forward? Because I think what we've seen in India, which is to me very interesting, compared to China, where in China they had this real push for foreigners coming in to learn from them.
Yes.
This never really happened in India. There was a little bit of a push from time to time, but it was never as extreme as it was in China. So do you think the locals are more and more important also from a role model perspective, just because it's like, hey, there's people made it abroad and now they're coming back home? Or what's your feeling towards that?
Martin, you're absolutely right. When I was studying, for example, you know, there was almost no automotive industry and certainly not an automotive design industry. So there were almost no role models. And I mentioned, you know, we couldn't even study automotive design in those days in India. So in terms of role models, we didn't have sort of homegrown role models, you know, and hopefully, you know, the people you've mentioned, you know, we are able to prove to or give some direction to students going into automotive design that if you do put in the work and if you make the effort, if you take the chances that life throws at you, if you make and take chances both, you know, you can actually make a real difference in automotive design. And being Indian in a market like India for an Indian company, I think there's a certain cultural resonance. I'm not saying that, you know, not everyone can do it. You know, anyone should be able to do any design role. But I think to be able to understand the cultural significance of a truly Indian brand, you know, it helps to be either Indian or have that background. It certainly has helped me a lot. I mean, I've lived more outside India than India, but, you know, my education, my grounding right from early days, you know, helps me understand what drives Indian customers. What are they looking for? And I touched upon some, you know, global OEMs who tried but didn't sort of really make it in India. I think there's that gap. You can have an outside view of India, you know, sitting in a studio in Europe or the US or in the Far East, which may not reflect the truth about the customer. And you can do a lot of market research and you'll get huge reports from market research companies. But as a head of design or as someone who's designing products for a significant market like that, I think you need to intrinsically know it more than what a report can tell you.
Yeah.
And this is why I think, you know, that's that one differentiator. I won't call it advantage or edge, but it's something that differentiates, you know, maybe someone with a Indian background working for the Indian market and being truly global. I mean, you know, some of the products that, you know, Tata is launching or we are going to launch are actually global products. They could hold their own anywhere, you know, in terms of safety, in terms of engineering, in terms of technology, you know, they're no less than anything else. So I say that if you can succeed and survive in the Indian market, you can also replicate that success in other markets, similar markets, you know. But yeah, that's a good point. I hope we are able to be a little bit of a role model for those who come after us. And like you said, you know, I think one of the shining stars out there is Sandeep. You know, I mean, look at his trajectory. I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal. And what he is doing at Renault, what he did at PSA, you know, should be, you know, not just pride for us as Indians, but, you know, the whole automotive industry, you know, what talent and hard work can get you and what you as a talented designer can do in a company which is more than 100 years old, you know. So, you know, really hats off to that guy.
And what I wanted to kind of dive a little bit deeper into, and because I find this very interesting, in terms of the comparison, what happened in China to what's happening in India at the moment, because size-wise, it's very similar. And in terms of its development with, you know, a middle class, a very strengthening middle class in that context as well, what we're seeing in China at the moment is this massive push of, let's say, the younger generation and this middle class in the volume market to really buy Chinese cars. Mm. So, you know, this kind of global appeal has turned a little bit into like, okay, look, we want to have something local. How do you see India responding to that? Obviously, you mentioned that, you know, it's 30 cars per about 1,000 people in that sense. But while the middle class matures, do you think that the push for Indian products in the local market is going to go up, or do you think that's where it's becoming interesting for like the global players as well? We know that Škoda is trying to come into the market. We're talking about Renault, of course, as well, with the rematch Dacias fundamentally.
Yeah, yeah.
But is that really the point that this pride that we're seeing developing in China at the moment is becoming also interesting to India and say like, hey, we want to have those homemade products because we're actually proud by the people, the companies, and we want to support it as well. Because that's for me really like interestingly to observe at the moment in China.
Yeah, you know, so Martin, I can say this with absolute confidence and conviction that, you know, there's a huge pride in buying Indian, right? But it's not the only thing. That product has to be good, as good or better than anything else. Because otherwise the Indian customer will still buy global. They will still buy what's best for their money. So just being Indian is not going to be enough. You have to be Indian and as good. If you're there, if you're Indian as good or better, then yes, people will buy it with a lot of pride. But if you are not as good in any parameter, could be technology, could be fuel economy, could be performance, could be, you know, connectivity, could be safety. You know, so for example, Indian companies today in India, we have a GNCAP rating. Most products are 5-star GNCAP, whereas lots of the overseas products are 0 or 1 or 2, you know. So, for example, safety has become a differentiator where Indian companies today in India, in the Indian market, are ahead of the global OEMs. So people do use that as a choice to buy Indian. But if you're worse on some of the parameters that the customer is looking for, being Indian will not save you. And it all won't be enough. So you have to be as good or better. And I say that with humility, but I also say that with confidence that, you know, if we are as good or better than anything else globally that's launched in India, we will, you know, stand a better chance to in the customer's eyes. You know, they feel real pride when the product is great. They will not buy it just because it's India. So I don't know how it works in China, but certainly in India, you've got to be as good, if not better. So,
yeah. So how do you see then the challenge for the designers? Because for you guys, it's interesting. You have on the one hand, the studio in India, you have a studio in the UK. When you were at Tata, you even had a studio also in Italy. So you have different cultural points of view. So what you're describing right now is both the mix of it needs to be affordable as well.
Yes.
I think
it
needs to be from a quality perspective, right? And also the branding slash the brand in itself needs to be appealing for that as well. So how do you find a balance for a product in India for that? Because obviously Europe is very much on a more premium, I would say, direction. The kind of entry level, lower cost markets are relatively rare in their development.
That's
as well.
Right. Yeah.
So how do you get the mindset of the European designers or the guys in Europe towards that Indian market, but at the same time, increase the quality expectation for your Indian guys to say like, okay, what can we do? Where can you find a balance for that? Because I can imagine that's a really, really tough battle to fight all the time for you with the studios and everything.
Yeah. And you know, you're absolutely right. This is a constant sort of, you know, pull, push, give, take, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, so the team here, for example, in the UK works extremely closely with the team in India, in Mumbai. And we work very, very closely with our tech center in Chennai. You know, it's called Mahindra Research Valley. It's about 4,000 engineers, you know, in the automotive space. And one thing I can tell you, in Mahindra, Martin, the real passion is to create the best products. And I've seen this across the departments, right? So even in manufacturing, you know, for example, we felt in design that, I'll just give you a small example. We wanted a laser welded body side to the roof, which was not a technology available in the company. You know, we were still doing spot welding of the roof to the body side and then putting a seal and a channel, etc. And we felt for design, for appearance, for quality, for body stiffness and performance, you know, the welded or the laser welded roof will be the right solution. So the company sort of embraced that completely because it was a global best practice anyway. There were lots of right reasons to do it. And, you know, within months, we had that ability inside Mahindra. You know, so when you're driven by the passion to create the best, you know, you do find solutions. I have seen this literally in these three and a half years you know, we are going to launch our range of BEVs under two brands currently, XUV and a new brand called BE. And you'll see them, you know, in the next calendar year, they'll be launched. And whoever we've shown the pre-production products to, you know, suppliers or CEOs or some select people, they're stunned by, you know, the overall design, quality, engineering of the products. And, you know, this is really, you know, truly possible when you have people driven by a united common passion, which is the passion to be the best. And then they are very respectful of what each other's profession is or what the job is. You know, we let a lot of engineers into our studios. Mahindra Research Valley always has someone from design there, either discussing something or tearing down something. You know, how can we be better? And we are really driven by that. And I've seen the power of that. And like I said, in a few months, when you see the new products, or when we launch them in India, I think people will be quite surprised by where we've got to in the time it took to get there. You know, it's been a rapid, like I said, when I joined the company, we didn't even have a sketch on paper for any of these products. And, you know, we're going to be launching 2, 3, 4 of them in a very short space of time. And you will see this sort of leap. So it's driven, like I said, driven by passion, people working closely together with each other, trusting each other, trusting their judgment. You know, the European team has been very pleasantly surprised by how far our Indian engineering team has gone to accommodate all of this within a very, very tight cost parameter. So you're right, this balance between quality and cost sometimes can be a spoil sport, but they have found the way to do it. And they have found creative ways with our suppliers to achieve what I think is going to be a very, very special set of products.
I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing that because I'm a big fan, avid listeners or like people that go to our events, like they know that we have a Citroen Ami as a company car. So I like, you know, very well executed, call them cheap cars in that context as well. And I think it's also something interesting because it's the kind of way that we need to bring mobility back to the people. And what I find very interesting about India and about the design in India is because of the budget restrictions, yeah, and the average income and everything that goes on with salaries in India, these kind of cheaper cars need to be good and they need to be safe so that people want to use them as well. But also they need to be good enough that they want to invest a large chunk of their money into them as well. And I think having that as a proving or like a concept or a proof of concept, then to bring them into Europe or into other areas, we're talking, I think, a lot about Africa in the future as well, where money will play a big role. That's where it becomes really interesting in context. And what I want to ask you in terms of the BEVs and in your role also for being a chief design officer, so not just in charge of the styling, but also in other things as well. How was it for you when you came into Mahindra or maybe also in your Tata days and you started talking to have the conversation about electric vehicles? Because we're talking, especially in Europe at a lot of the moment, like, electric vehicles, prices are like going down massively, but really the biggest problem is the infrastructure behind it. Now, India has over 1 billion people. So if you want to sell those electric vehicles, you have to kind of support or get the support from the government with the infrastructure as well. So when you start a project like that from a design's perspective, how do you envision that with your top level bosses to say, we need to create something holistically, we need to create something that people want to buy this where the infrastructure is not there? And where, you know, we compete with something which is pretty much available everywhere, aka petrol. Because I can imagine in a, let's say, developed country like Germany, the US, or like even China, you say like, this is easy for us to use and we don't really have that much fear of usage. India might be probably very different.
you're right. So there's two parts to this answer, actually. One is Mahindra. Mahindra actually truly believes in creating markets where none exist. I think it's a challenger brand in that sense. You know, we will go in and create opportunities, create a market where on paper, you know, like you said, on paper, there are all of these other issues to turn you away from a market or actually not look at it seriously enough. I mean, you know, you can talk about infrastructure, you can talk about mindset, you can talk about salaries, you can talk about many things. But we truly feel, and my CEO, who's my boss, he gave me just a one-line brief. He said, make me a range of the sexiest looking EVs that you can think of. And people will buy them because of that. They're absolutely, they fall in love with them. And then they happen to be EVs. You know, it's not the other way around. It's not that, oh, I'm going to go out and buy an EV and now let me look at what suits me, etc. He said, when people see it on at first sight, Pratap, they should say, okay, I want to have this car. And then it happens to be an EV. So if you flip the equation and you create enough desire in wanting one of these products, we truly feel that it will be the tipping point, or it will actually put pressure on the system as well to respond. And as you know, the Indian government now has a huge push on infrastructure. So the highways are getting better, the roads are getting better, there's a massive infrastructure push. But not only that, there's also, let's say, energy safety issue. You know, we know when one country turns off the tap, what it can do. So energy security is a very, very big topic in India, as it is anywhere globally. And we feel the less dependent we are on, you know, because we import most of our oil, you know, for most of the oil in India is imported. So A, it has a huge foreign exchange, you know, outflow from the country, and B, it's an energy security question. So India and the Indian government is committed to sort of, you know, reduce our dependence on foreign fuel and foreign oil. And electrification is one such way, as you said. And, you know, there are incentives that they've been rolling out in multiple phases, you know, for public transport, for three-wheelers, for two-wheelers. There's now one for charging, you know, for businesses that want to set up charging stations and charging companies. There's incentives for that as well. So I think there's a realization both on the companies, you know, public and private, that they need to work together to do this. But going back to that initial chicken and egg scenario, you know, I think Mahindra really likes to push. And we feel, again, if we create a great product, people will come. You know, this, like I said, the product we just launched a couple of weeks ago, you know, 200,000 bookings is phenomenal. It's like 3 or 4 years of production, you know, already booked in one day. Our hope is that, and again, you know, when people see these products, when they experience it, they will hopefully realize what a huge jump an EV is, and a born EV, not a converted, ICE-converted EV. A truly born EV has some advantages that are undeniable, you know, and if the cars look great, feel great, make you, you know, create that emotional bond, I think, you know, we have every chance of success.
Jumping onto that, and, you know, this kind of success, and let's look a few years into the future for that as well, is where ideally the Indian car design community and the products are getting to such a high level that people accept them, they're really proud of having them and stuff like that. What do you think needs to happen to really get a Indian design philosophy or something that is really fundamentally Indian in its approach from a car design perspective? Because we can look back and, like, you know, you know what's American, you know, kind of that's a German car, that's a French car, it's always a bit quirky, you know, you know what a Volvo looks like in terms of and connected directly with Sweden. What do you think needs to happen, both from a craftsmanship perspective, but also maybe culturally, to develop something then that becomes Indian made, an Indian, you know, an Indian icon in that context?
Yes, I do agree. You know, Martin, I don't think we have that yet. And like we said, you know, when you compare the Indian automotive, true indigenous automotive development, it's probably 20 or 30 years old. And, you know, others have had, therefore, you know, 90 or 80-year-old head start. I remember one thing, you know, when I was presenting to Professor Pfeiffer once, a clay model in Japan, he had visited us. I was obsessing with the fact, was it German enough? Obviously, Mercedes. So, you know, I asked him, Professor, do you think this is German enough? And, you know, he said, you know, Germany will take care of itself, Pratap. You have to just think if it's Mercedes enough. And that taught me a lot. You know, I think when you have to sharpen actually what your brand is. And a brand has a certain place of provenance, right? Nike is a global company. It's still from Beaverton. Adidas is still from Germany. They're all global companies. But the brand has a provenance. And he said, if you can stay faithful to what your brand is. And if you can shape your brand, of course, if you have the fortune of shaping a brand, then I think that's the only thing you should worry about. Because like it or not, automatically it will be linked to the country, right? Yeah. So, and yeah. I found that amazing because, you know, he said, look, we have three big German brands, right? Mercedes, BMW, and Audi. All look different, but if they are all true to what they are, they will inevitably be German anyway. You don't have to say yeah. that. It's only when a brand loses what it is, when it loses what it wants to be and what it wants to become, that's when you have the confusion. So, to long story short, Martin, I think our brands are young still. We have only two. You know, there's only Tata and Mahindra, truly Indian automotive brands. And I think it's just a question of time that we define exactly what they are and we stay on that path for a few years. And then you'll see this confidence and this unique set of products actually emerging. I mean, for example, I speak to a lot of our CDOs and design chiefs in different conferences where you and I are usually there. And they said, you know, Pratap, we just cannot understand what is this 4-meter car, you know? We have never designed a 4-meter or below 4 meters car anywhere. You know, the smallest hatchback in Europe is generally already, you know, a Polo is already more than 4 meters. You know, how do you all do this? That's a unique product category that's emerged. And we have a sedan in that. We have SUVs. We have, you know, hatchbacks, obviously. You know, yeah. So in that, we are able to create a whole family of products. Like Japan does the K cars, you know, which are 3395 or something like that in length. That has become a very unique thing to Japan. So I think the sub 4-meter product, again, you know, you mentioned Skoda, you mentioned others. They have to now try and adapt within that. Yes, it's an architectural framework. It's an architectural boundary. But I think within that, you solve a lot of unique Indian questions. You know, like India, you know, people usually have a chauffeur, whatever the size of car. So they sit at the back. How do you give a leg room and then loading space to an Indian family? You know, they all travel heavy. You know, they have big bags and, you know, they're picking up relatives from the railway station. So you need a boot, you need rear leg room, and you need safety in the front. How do you fit all of that into 4 meters, you know? So the architectural context of that type of product will actually create very, very Indian products. And I think it'll happen in other spheres. The second is the question of value, like you said. Indians are extremely value conscious, regardless of the segment they're in. So an S-Class buyer in India of a Mercedes or a 7 Series will still want the most value he can get for that money, for that S-Class. And it's the same at the entry level of the market. So this is another thing that a lot of overseas companies really struggle with. Nissan had the famous case of Datsun, right? They tried to bring it to India, but it wasn't enough value that people saw. You know, you can't call a car cheap. You can't make it look and feel cheap. People have a certain sense of pride. In their wallet size, they still want, you know, the best. They're still aspirational. They still feel that if I drive up to my son's school, if I drive up to a 5-star hotel, even if it's, you know, a car for, let's say, 10 lakhs, so, you know, for £10,000, it still has to make me feel, you know, respectable. It still has to make me feel good about it, not ashamed, you know. So giving that emotional value is as important as giving real physical value, like I mentioned, space, features, all of that is there. But I think you have to be able to give emotional value to the buyer. And this is something which is very, very unique to India. And many global OEMs who break down the market in terms of just price and cost and size sometimes miss this aspect that, we created a product, but is anyone proud to buy it? Is anyone proud to own it? Is anyone proud to share it? Is anyone proud to take it to their relatives? You know, India is very family oriented. What do I feel when I take it to my neighbor's house or my friend's place? Even if it happens to be an entry car, does it make me feel respected? And I think that's important. And that's a very, very strong element, Martin, of the Indian culture, which I think, you know, we must understand.
Absolutely. And following on to that, how important is that digital movement at the moment? I mean, India, of course, alongside with China, has almost been digital native. Yeah. So everybody can do almost everything with their phone, payment options, everything that goes along with that as well. Now, when we're talking about what we would call cheap cars over here in Europe, but cars that are desirable than in India as well, how much of a challenge is that for you to stick within those boundaries of money slash of price offering, especially with the younger generation, to then say like, look, you want to have this, you want to use your iPhone or like your mobile phone in general connected and have that kind of experience as well? Because on the one hand, we see these massive developments and budget directions that go towards that as well. On the other hand, we have again the balance of like, we need to stick to a certain kind of budget price and something that needs to be affordable. So for you as a designer, when you decide on your USPs and where you want to put money from a design's perspective, how important has the digital world become to make this a good product and for it to be considered a good product?
Yeah, Martin, you're absolutely right. I mean, regardless of the geography, regardless of the economics, the socioeconomic status, the demography, so age doesn't come into it, which city you're from doesn't come into it. India is truly digital. I mean, you can buy fruits from the street using digital payment. No cash, no cards, no nothing. And so, this digital, consuming and being a part of the digital world in India is super important. And this, again, we see as a big cultural difference. So when we configure our products, we make sure that we are going in with the right level of technology, not only for the vehicle, but I mean connected technology. Mm-hmm. So even in one of our smallest cars, which we launched, earlier this year, from home, you can switch on the aircon. You can do, I think there are 70 or 80 things you can do with the app. And this is a car which average price is £10,000. It's unheard of in many small cars or even medium cars in Europe. If you don't subscribe or you don't pay a certain amount of money, you pretty much get nothing, and that doesn't work. So again, if I speak about the Mahindra example, we've been real leaders in bringing cutting edge digital technology to cars. I want to include, Martin, even the sound system in digital, because the music is highly, highly consumed commodity in India. People are listening to it all the time. Bollywood, I think, makes, a few thousand songs a year. I think Bollywood itself makes 400 or 500 films. Each film probably has 4 or 5 songs. You're talking about 3,000, 4,000 songs. And then there's a whole South film industry. So the amount of music content that's created, people want to consume. So they do that on the phone. And when they get into the car, they want to seamlessly have that experience in their car. So it's not so much about navigation or some of this. It's about consuming media, funnily enough. Mm-hmm. So streaming services, doing stuff with Alexa, Google, and like I said, music. So the music system is one area we put a lot of emphasis. We have already a couple of cars, we use a Harman Kardon system, specially tuned by them in Germany. They've been one of our really strong partners, but we have others. But having a Harman Kardon system in a product of £10,000-£12,000 is unheard of. So we do find ways, and we do, like you said, that balance of priorities is definitely something we keep in mind, and the digital experience is a part of that. How and when it'll turn and change, we don't know. But what we see is a very, very strong trend towards digital consumption and having this connectivity, truly. And it feels so cool, so incredible that people come in. Sometimes I go to India. When I go to India, I go to the showrooms, where we sell our cars. And you see young kids jump into the car and they connect their phone seamlessly to the infotainment system. The parents are struggling, but the 10-year-old boy has already paired his phone with our system and he's listening to it. So this sort of seamlessness, they take it for granted, right? India is a young country. The average age is just 25 or 26. I think there are 600 or 700 million people under the age of 30. So it's a young country in general. And I think, like you said, they are all born digital native. So we see that as a strong force. We are doing everything in our power, Martin, in the HMI design to make sure that it doesn't get overwhelming, it doesn't get distracting. There's lots of distraction on the road, as you can imagine. So we want safety to still be above anything else when you're operating our systems. So we put a lot of stress on the HMI and UI UX design so that, you know, you're always safe, but you're still able to connect seamlessly and enjoy truly digital experiences. Yeah.
Yeah. This sounds very much to me. I mean, like, you know, we internally here at Concept House with the team and everything, we talk a lot about markets, how, you know, the design studios need to adapt slash like, you know, how design studios are in the future located and what their roles will be and stuff. But yeah, from what you're saying right now, we're looking actually to a lot of similarities of what happens in China as well, because we're talking about, you know, you need to make the product in China and not just make in terms of production, but also in terms of the cultural understanding, you know, the design for it as well, to understand all of the tiny little bits and pieces, you know, that also locally can play a role, north, south, those kind of things. And it seems obviously India is culturally so diverse. I don't know how many, like, you know, dozens or even hundreds of languages are actually, you know, spoken in India in that sense. Where I want to get to is, do you actually see it realistic for a foreign company to come in? And we're not talking about on the premium level, because premium luxury, I think, is always a little bit exception, you know, from that. But for somebody who wants to come in the volume market, so where you are based, where the Tatas are based, to come in and really compete, because I don't see that at the moment really in China. And from what you're saying right now, unless they're making a full development commitment for India as well, it almost seems impossible to, on the one hand, reach the price point, but also the quality, the expectations, you know, the connectivity, the overall holistic brand that goes along with that, if you just want to bring any kind of random profit.
So, Martin,
it seems like,
you know,
that time is done.
Here, I'll take the example, a very good example of another Asian country, which is Korea. And I think Korea, through Hyundai and Kia, has done exceedingly well in India. And, you know, Kia has been a very, very late entrant into the Indian market. Hyundai has been there for a few years. But they have really set very high benchmark of what you can do, you know, with the right product, the right balance of cost, quality, performance. It's always these moving equations in automotive, right? And I think, if I'm perfectly honest, Hyundai and Kia have really been a great example of how an overseas brand can and should enter a market like India. They have really made a success of it. They make great products there. You know, there's some products they did just for and in India, but took overseas. Hyundai Venue is one of them. You know, the Creta does extremely well in India. The Seltos from Kia, you know, so they have, Martin, really managed this cost, quality, performance, design equation very, very well. And they're, in my books, they are the case study of how to enter an Indian market as an overseas player. So if anyone wants to, you know, sort of benchmark them, they should. They're a very, very good example. And, you know, like I said, it has come from Asia in that sense. And they've done better than many of the Japanese companies, Martin, which have been in India even longer, actually.
Yeah.
So, which is why I'm singling out Hyundai and Kia. And a lot of credit to them as companies.
I mean, you can also say Maruti Suzuki, in terms of that / collaboration, of course, it helps to learn from the locals in that sense. And I think the example of Hyundai is great, but we can also take that to further levels, because we can say, like, look, Hyundai has done the same thing in America. They've done the same thing in their as their group in Europe to that level as well. So there is a cultural understanding and also, I think, a respect that comes in there as well, to say, like, look, we're not telling you what to do, but we listen to what's happening in that market and we adapt.
And Martin, you know, like I was saying earlier, it's not only about the product, it's also about the brand. So they've also built the two brands very, very strongly. Mm-hmm. And again, it's been linked to the rise of Korea in the global stage, right? So the, you know, the LGs, the Samsungs, the K-pop, you know, so there's a K-wave globally that Hyundai and Kia have been part of. That's why I say, you know, if you are able to really ride on the positive wave that your country creates, you know, it helps. And globally, the respect for Korean products, especially in high-tech areas, you know, the Samsung LGs of the world, you know, is something which Hyundai and Kia have also lived up to, you know, so people see them in that light, that they're high tech, high quality, but still accessible products. They're no way low cost, but they're accessible, you know, and they are mm-hmm. also aspirational. So, you know, in that sense, and this is what I was going back to earlier, you know, it doesn't help, or it doesn't necessarily is an advantage to be just Indian if you're not as good as anyone else.
Yeah.
So, you know, the customer still buys the best they can get for their money anywhere. So,
yeah. So before we come to an end, there's something that I kind of want to come back to from what we started off in the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit your title and your role, because title officially within Mahindra is Chief Design and Creative Officer.
Yeah.
Now, that is just from a title perspective, what a lot of people are kind of aspiring to get to in terms of responsibility, board membership, all these kind of things as well.
Yeah.
Now, you said early on, especially when you moved over to Mahindra, is that they had this ambition to push for design and, like, you know, give it the responsibility and just the importance that it needs to make better products. How difficult was that in the beginning, and maybe also in your Tata days, to get that kind of respect for the design department when, if you look into the history of Indian manufacturing, Indian, you know, tech development, it was a lot about engineering, software engineers, IT, kind of things, very highly tangible, logical things. How difficult was it in the beginning to get that respect and just to kind of say, yes, we're not necessarily tangible. Yes, we can play around with numbers and those things, but to trust it, where the culture, of course, is very creative, but the design in itself was, as you mentioned as well, a very new, you know, area of the business as well. So how was that for you, especially in that Indian context where it's newer than in other companies?
Yeah, you know, so when you look for competitive advantage, Martin, you know, there's three or four areas. One is technology, one is brand, and one is design, actually. And I look at brand and design as kind of one of the same thing, right?
Yeah.
When the realization comes that either you are unable to catch up with technology as fast as truly tech leaders, or, you know, your brand is not strong enough, you have the technology, but your brand is still not getting you the customers, that's when people start looking, or companies start looking for, what else do we need to do, right? And in both cases, you know, I think technology, product quality, all of that is at par, or in some cases better than the competition. But I think the brand side, you know, the image, what you say, the consistency, what a showroom looks like, every touch point of the company, that was where there were inconsistencies. So when my CEO said, look at the way brand is expressed, anywhere brand is expressed, I want design to be a part of that. And that's what he made my role into, actually, the design and creative officer. When I joined in 2020, it was just CDO. And then he changed that because he saw the value we were able to bring in creating this seamless, harmonious experience. That means, so we started designing the showrooms. We started designing all the logos. Everywhere that the brand is expressed actually comes to me now. Even how we photograph the cars, the image of the car in the advert, the color, the way it's shot. So wherever, Martin, brand is expressed, it now falls under my role. And that is the fundamental shift, right? So we created a great product. We had to get the brand into a certain space. Now we are introducing a fifth sub-brand called B, which didn't exist at all. You know, so what is that brand language? What does it say to the customer? What does it look and feel like? These are things that me and the design team now define. It's not by some agency sitting outside, just doing it as a project, or sometimes, you know, changing the logo on the PowerPoint and giving it to you. You know, this is us in the company who are defining what everything looks like, the typeface, the font, the color. We've in fact even designed each font for each of these brands that you'll see going forward. So it's down to that level. It's much beyond the product design itself. So product as a part of the brand, and then what that looks, feels, seems, is experienced like. What does the app look like? You know, is the app the same language as the HMI system? You know, earlier there was all different. We gave it to different agencies and you turned on the app, it had a different look. You went into the car, the HMI had a different look. You went in the showroom, it was something else. You look at the brochure, it was yet another thing. So to bring this sort of, you know, harmony and unity of experience is where my job role actually got expanded rather than changed. You know, it's more an expansion. Yeah. And I always tell designers, especially students, I don't have a written job description anywhere in the company. It's what you choose to take on as a designer. And I think if you can choose to take on areas, you know, beyond your focus of car design, of course, you have to have that. You know, you stand a greater chance of influencing more within your company. And I think that's really great, you know, to be in a position to at least influence that. I don't say that I'm the final signatory, you know, it's not like an ego trip, but you're in those conversations, Martin, you know, so that's what's important. You're at the table where some of these decisions are being taken and you can have an equal voice to influence that decision. I think that's the opportunity rather than, you know, what your title is and all of that. So you have the opportunity to influence what the company looks, feels, is seen as, you know, and I love that bit of the role, actually.
And I think that's the perfect ending to our little session because it's such a positive note and also just like a motivation to everybody. So Pratap, thank you very, very, very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. And you know, I hope you had as much fun and I hope the questions were good fun for you in that context. And we'll see each other very, very soon on various different kind of show floors or somewhere in the UK or whatever. But thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.